Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Monday, June 28, 2021, and this is Foxology. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy Monday blessings to you. I truly do hope you're having a very blessed day already. And if it didn't start out that way, well, keep blessing it, even if it doesn't feel like a reality or like it's really a great day for you. I know how it is. Depending on what happened before you went to bed, depending on what may or may not have happened during the night, and depending on what events occurred since your feet hit the floor this morning, I know some days are harder than others to rise up and say, I'm blessed. It can be a challenge. I'm telling you, I know to say that this is the day the Lord has made, and I'll rejoice and be glad in it. I know. But folks, hear me, listen to me, hear what I'm saying. Say it anyway. I've told you that more than a time or two. Put those words out in your atmosphere and keep them coming out of your mouth. Speak them when you feel weak. Proclaim them when you feel strong. Let those words find a permanent place in your mind and heart until they flow from your mouth as easily as you breathe. I'm blessed. This is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Say it until it sinks deep within. It will get easier and easier. And here's the good news. It'll get truer. And truer. Yes, indeed. But you know what isn't always so easy to say? Coming out as gay. And why is that? Well, there are many reasons. And today I'm talking with someone who knows the impact of what that up close and personal feeling could be if you have to tell people about it. I have known this multi-gifted artist for many years. As a kid, and I'm not talking about as a teenager, I'm talking about as a kid. He was already writing, composing, and singing, and he would often perform for our guests at my monthly prayer breakfast back in the day, way back in the day in Milwaukee. He has a true gift. One of his very first recordings was sang, composed especially for me, and I still have it on a cassette tape, if that tells you anything. About how long ago his talents have been brewing, fueling, and manifesting. And you know what? This is kind of a secret, but truth be told, he might have had like a little boy crush on me. I know he won't admit it, but I think so when he wrote that song. LOL. And more recently, he composed the intro music to my Foxology show that's entitled, appropriately, did I say that? Yeah. You foxy thing. He is a brilliant artist, and I am going to go into his life and in his business a little bit to talk about his incredible achievements, and we will also talk about how being gay has affected his life. I'm so happy, and I am excited to present this man, this musician, this multi-award-winning artist, the one I affectionately call the maestro, Mr. Germano Toussaint. Welcome, Germano.
Thank you. Thank you, Silver Ray. I think we both aged as you told that intro. I'm like 56 now.
Don't tell anybody.
No, okay.
Stop it.
I'm joking.
Just stop it.
But thank you. That was lovely.
Well,
that was lovely.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure to have you, sir. Thank you for being my special guest today. We really do go way back, though, don't we?
We go, like I was telling someone when I first met you, and I was like, oh, my God, that was decades. That wasn't years. That was decades.
It was decades.
Oh,
absolutely.
My
it was
oh,
de-
my God.
Decades ago. And I think it was your uncle and Pastor Bo who initially brought you in on the events that I was having, you know, from month to month. And boy, we were excited when you were always willing to bring such wonderful spiritual entertainment to us. It was just so, so awesome. And you're still awesome. So I don't want to talk about that.
I want to
go back and talk about, I'm always very curious about people when they find their gifts so early in life and just never switch gears. I'm always excited and entertained by that thought. So there are a lot of people who do, and then there's, you know, people like me who did 20 things on the way to now. But
yeah,
that's okay. I'm still
okay.
Good.
That's okay.
So let's talk. Yeah, it is. It is. Let's talk about your musical background first. Let's go back because I know you were playing in the church and for us as a little guy. Did your mom have you in training for any of that?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. My grandmother saw me pounding on a table, and I would think
wow.
that anyone would just think, oh, this kid is just pounding on a table. But she automatically said, put this child in piano. And I don't know how she knew, but she told my mom to put me in piano. I was only three. So I think when I was four, I finally started lessons. And Linda Evans, I will never forget her. I was my first teacher. She played by ear, and she played blues and R&B and jazz and all this stuff. But she wanted me, my mom wanted me to read music. So Linda was teaching me how to read music, but then I would ask her, because I was manipulative, I would ask her to play the song for me so I could get a sense for how it would go. So she would play the song. I don't think she thought anything of it. And then she's like, okay, now play what's on the sheet. But I had already memorized what she had done. So I was faking
wow.
it for a long time, which she realized that I was playing by ear. Which did hurt me horribly in the end, but you know, I didn't know the difference between, I didn't even know that that was a thing. Playing by ear was like a gift. It was just like, I'm trying to get through this lesson, you know, as a little kid. But yeah, that's, there were several
that's
other
phenomenal.
Teachers that tried to cultivate my ear and like have me play jazz and R&B. My mom was like, no. He's going to read music. He's going to learn this classical repertoire. And that also helped tremendously.
Wow. Wow. Do you remember what was your biggest influence besides that teacher? What was it, or when was it that made you feel like, oh, I think this is going to be a life thing for me, or it looks like this is going to be a career? When was that?
Well,
when did that happen for you?
Yeah, well, everyone in my family sings. Like, if you don't sing, in my family, you're probably adopted or so, like, married into the family. Even the ones in my family that are like, oh, I don't sing, they sing. So it's just a thing. Like, you know, Bo, obviously, my Pastor Bo, he sings, my uncle. He had a group. My mom had a little singing thing. My uncle had a group. I wrote a play about my uncle's group called Sunny Song last year. And so the story goes that when I was in the crib, they would sing to me like at four-bar harmony, like doo-wop, you know, stuff and all of that. So I think that was sort of like I was bathed in that environment, and that's what trained my ears.
Right.
Because back in the day, they were like these late 70s, early 80s, or like these basement parties before everyone got saved. They were singing and playing Stax records and Motown, and that like, influenced me greatly. But how I got into theater was, again, Pastor Bo took me to see a performance of Dreamgirls at Hansberry Sands Theater in Milwaukee. And I knew right away, I was 8 years old, and I knew, I'm like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I wasn't going to have the rest of my life be on stage, but I wanted to make people feel what I felt. I'm like, I have to write stuff like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was a transformative
moment. You know, it just
moment.
Came to, It just came to mind about another production. I think, didn't I have like a 2-minute part in it? That just came to my mind. What was that production? Do you recall?
I think you wanted to play the mother in Caged. I think that was
And you
it,
didn't
right?
pick me?
No, you said you didn't want to sing because it was a singing role.
Oh, well, you know we weren't going to make that happen. I didn't recall that was the deal.
It was a
musical. That's definitely a deal breaker.
It was definitely a deal breaker. Yeah.
But I remember doing
like
something.
You were like, no. Sorry.
You know what? A couple of people with bad ears told me that I can sing, and I don't sing. Believe me, if I could sing, the world would know because I wouldn't even talk anymore. I'd sing everything that I had to say.
Oh my God. There would be no doubt.
There would be no doubt whatsoever.
Yeah. You wanted to play her, though, and I was like, yeah, it's a musical. You're like, wait a minute. Do I have to sing? I'm like, what's every character sings?
Yeah, well, all right. Well, if you ever come up with something that nobody, you know, the part doesn't require singing, you know, I'm here for you.
I'm sure I have some things.
Yeah, well, I'm just putting it out there. But anyway, let's move on through your career. So at some point you did get to the point, like I was just talking about now, where you did decide that you were going to actually write some plays. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So my first, I took a class. I was at Cardinal Stritch. I wasn't thinking about playwriting. I was always making up stories, but you know, I wasn't thinking about becoming a playwright. And I took an English class, and you know, we were just learning grammar and all that. And my teacher had an assignment where she wanted us to do some creative writing. You can write a play, you can write a poem. I decided to write a short play. And she handed me my paperback and she said, you're a playwright. And
wow.
I just dismissed it. I'm like, what is she? I had never written a play in my life. I've not thought about doing that. But I remember that to this day. And years later, I think in my senior year, I have a sister who, we all have sisters and brothers, but we don't use that term. But I have an older sister that was on the street. She, you know, she worked on the street. I just wondered what happened for her to, you know, have that life. And she had like 9 kids, something like that. Because she didn't have any abortions or anything. And some of the nurses adopted kids. It's just like this really traumatic life. And I just wondered what happened to her because I didn't grow up with her. No, we couldn't find her. She was on the street. So I tried to get in touch with her. I couldn't. No one could find her. And I met up with a friend of mine, Dr. Sherry Williams-Pinnell, who suggested that I contact the Nia Amani family in Milwaukee, the Nia Amani family house, which is a halfway house, transitional living facility, rather, for women who have been on the streets. And I interviewed those women and created Caged, which is a musical, which was basically about their life. 13 women I interviewed, and I created 6 characters from that. And that was my first theater production ever. And it was sold out for 2 straight weeks, right before
mm-hmm.
I moved to New York. Moved to New York 2 days after it closed.
Well, that's believing big, I tell you, because anytime anybody can tackle the Big Apple with their dream, you are not playing.
Yeah.
And here you are, you know, here you are doing such amazing things. So I'd like to hear, because I love hearing people's stories. So you launched out after that to New York. How quickly the doors opened for you?
Was that hard? Well, New York is people have their guards up. And people don't easily let you into their circle. They want to know what do you want? Who are you about? Where are you from? You know, all of that. Which was very shocking to me. It took me 2 years to get one friend in New York. I was alone for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I was at NYU, and I had joined this listserv for musicals because I was like trying to get into this and write more musicals and collaborate. And I hadn't gotten any hits or anything I was interested in, so I was about to go into the library and take my name off of the listserv. And then I saw a posting for this musical in L.A. that was really interesting because it was all black cast, all black creative team. And it was posted by this playwright, Marcus Gardley. And I responded, and we met across the street, and we instantly hit it off. We have the same birthday. we looked the same. It was just crazy energy. And he sort of thrust me into this whole Broadway scene because I was working with Broadway actors and like Broadway music directors, and like I was not prepared. Like whatever I thought I learned in Milwaukee did not prepare me for this. This was like real professional theater, and it was sort of my training, like on the fly training as to how to work with these people and how to work with these types of productions and what the scheduling is and the timeline. But he's not working. He writes for The Chi, and like he's about to write, I forget which movie. It's like either a Marvin Gaye biopic or something. It's a new biopic, but he's, you know, definitely has shot up in the career ladder. But he was my introduction to like professional theater. And I don't know where I would have been or how long it would have taken had I not met him.
You know, it has to be extremely competitive there, you know, because there, I mean, entertainment like that is one of the central focuses in New York. How did you maneuver that? I know, you know, does it go back to, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know, just like with this, the instance that you just described. But, of course, you'd have to have a whole bunch of talent to take along with that. So how did you continue to maneuver your way?
Yeah, that's so. It is definitely who you know. And you. This is something I've actually grappled with, so I don't have a definitive answer because I've seen people who I don't think are very talented, like really rise fast because of how they promote themselves, how aggressively they promote themselves. And I've never been that person. Like I said, like I will probably have to hire someone to promote me. Because I've never been that person, like, look at me, see me, look what I'm doing. Come, I'm getting better at it. But, yeah, it's definitely who you know. And I realize that everything I need to do what I need to do, I have that circle now. Like, I can reach out to a lighting person, a stage manager, a sound designer, or all the fierce actresses in the city. I know them. Like, I can call on people now. Donors, people that want to invest in my work. Like I actually have people that I can ask for to invest if they're interested and feel led to the project. But it took almost 20 years to cultivate that, you know, community and then all of those resources. So it's definitely who you know. But at the end of the day, even if you have talent, if nobody knows about it, if you're not putting it out there for people to see, it's not going to go anywhere. There's tons of underground talent in New York, in Milwaukee, Chicago, everywhere that nobody knows about because they don't have the right platform or they're not getting in front of the right audiences. That's a whole nother side of the business that some people are just really good at. And they may not be really good at what they're doing, but they're really good at promoting themselves and getting themselves in front of the right people. That's just my opinion.
Well, I asked that question for a couple of reasons, because I wanted to know, for one thing, and the other is because I like for people who listen to the show to understand everything's not a cakewalk and most things are not easy, and it uh-huh. takes, you know, it takes some tenacity and talent, if talent is your thing. You know, it takes some... Yeah. Some real personal strengths and savvy to continue, especially out there where you are, particularly.
Talent's not enough.
You know, anywhere.
Talent's not enough.
Pardon me?
Oh, talent's not enough.
I'm sorry, say it again.
It's not enough.
Yeah.
Oh, talent's not enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. But I like for people to hear that, you know, it just doesn't happen overnight, but it doesn't mean that you can't fulfill your dream. You just got to keep going at it, and that's why I wanted you to talk about that a little bit more expansively. That was great. Well, let's fast forward, because you have been busy in the last couple of years and few months.
Yes. I need it. I'm like begging for a nap. It's been a lot. I've been really busy.
Tell us about it.
Well, actually,
tell us about those new things.
I was at the Apollo Theater for 3.5 years, and that sort of took over my life. So I was laid off because of the pandemic. I had to lay a bunch of people off, which is really sad. But I ended up, you know, how do I say this? I felt like I had a deadline to just write everything that I ever wanted to write. So it's like, I don't know how long this thing is going to last. I don't know when this unemployment is going to run out. I don't know when anything's going to happen. So I'm just going to, I finished a play. I wrote a musical and I finished an album and did like 4 other online shows. Cause I'm like, I just have to get this out there. At least I can say that it's done. I don't know what's happening next year. So it's like, I have to do this while I have the time, because part of the struggle with New York is it's very expensive. And so, like, I couldn't be a full-time artist. So I've always done art on the side with the things that I've had to do to pay the bills, which most of that has been, like, fundraising, individual giving, that type of stuff. So that's I think it's hindered my how much I can produce. And for the 3 years I was at the Apollo, I think I did 1 concert, which was at the Apollo. That I produced at Crystal Morning Hall's show at the Apollo Music Cafe. But that in the 3.5 years, that's all I could really do with my free time. But this year, I was thinking about what could I have done had I not spent, you know, most of my day at a job, you know, trying to pay bills and, you know. So that's important. Time is so precious to me now.
Yeah, like I understand that.
Take advantage of every free moment while also trying to take care of myself and make sure I get rest and sleep and don't drive myself crazy. I can be a little bit of a slave driver to myself and some of the people I work with.
Yeah.
I'm glad everyone I know that works with me knows that, so they know how I work. But yeah, this has been a very productive year. I think mostly because of that.
Well, I know most recently you've worked on a couple of things that were just released in the last few months. Tell us about those.
Yeah, so I think, the musical, there's the musical and the album. So which would you rather?
Can you tell us about both?
Delve into? Okay, so the musical was called The Last Gatekeeper. Is called The Last Gatekeeper. And it's about, the concept that this shaman that I have read and studied called, his name is Maladoma Somme. He's from Burkina, West Africa. And he talks about this concept of the gatekeepers being people that have 1 foot in the spirit world, 1 foot in the physical world, that have traditionally been the mediators in the community leaders, conflict resolution folk, people that cultivate the gifts in other people, like identify the gifts and help people fulfill their purpose in life using their gifts. In his village, those were the witches, the shaman, the spiritual leaders. But he realized later in life that they were all what we call same gender loving or queer, gay, trans people. So I started to do my own research on that. And there's an amazing book called Boy Wives and Female Husbands that I think every single person should read that is interested in indigenous sexuality and spirituality. But in almost all indigenous cultures, this was the case. Indigenous Russia, Native American Two-Spirit people, the Philippines, South America, this was like a belief where other gendered, other sexualities were considered, they were revered in some cultures. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool to write a sort of a fantasy, sci-fi, Afrofuturist musical where, like, there's a totalitarian government and there's a prophecy that this gatekeeper is going to be born that will overthrow and topple this government and sort of free the people. So I set it up probably 50 years in the future after an apocalypse, and the totalitarian government is basically terrorizing people. And this young woman has a child with someone who's in a resistance movement. And this child exudes extreme spiritual gifts, spiritual almost to the point of being like a mutant type of thing. And she tries to hide him and keep him from using these gifts, because the more visible you are, the more seen, the more susceptible you are to being punished by this government, captured, tortured, etc. But his grandmother is a gatekeeper from the old country in West Africa, and she sees his gifts, and she recognizes him as the child that was prophesied. So she tries to teach him how to use his gifts to fulfill his purpose in life, which she believes is to overthrow this government. And throughout this musical, there are ancestor spirits that are guiding him, even though he gets off course. They keep reminding him of who he is and what his mission is. So it deals a lot with like African ancestry, African spirits, spirituality, and then our indigenous sexuality, like what we believed before we were taught Christian beliefs, basically.
Well, you know what I hear? I hear a lot of analogies, and the thing that kept coming to my mind is how art imitates life. I can hear, and I guess probably from your own sense of creativity, you know, it is art imitating life. There's so much that just in that brief description could, you know, align with things that are going on right now in life and in the world. But don't tell the whole story. Let people.
Because I was about to
go.
I have to remember.
Yeah, I could hear you about to tell the whole story. Anyway, I know you released a single or two recently. Let's just briefly tell us about that, and then I want to switch gears.
Yeah, so the single is called Having a Party. It was originally about my upbringing, you know, in the party atmosphere in Milwaukee. But since it's Pride Month, I thought I would, for the music video, have like a black queer lens to sort of celebrate that aspect of the community, which doesn't get seen a lot. Michael Michelle Lynch, who has a show coming up at Lincoln Center outdoors on July 6th, was the lead singer. I love their voice. They have a very like blues, sort of that gritty sound that I love.
Mm-hmm.
So they were the lead. They're also a drag performer. So they were the lead singer. And then I had like a bunch of my friends, you know, in the music video. So that was released, I think, early June. And then I have the album, Brown Liquor and Blessed Oil, that will be released July 4th on all platforms. And that's also about my journey from those basement parties to being ordained as a minister, to coming out of the closet, to moving to New York and pursuing my artistry. And the songs are anchored by audio of my therapy sessions where I'm working through these issues with my therapist.
Mm-hmm. What an interesting title, Brown Liquor and Blessed Oil. Mm-hmm. I'll be looking into that when it's all out there. But it's a great place for right now for us to switch gears. It's very commendable, all that you've done, Germano.
Thank you.
Really, it is. I want to talk about some other things that I mentioned in the intro that are specific to your personal life as a gay man. And I have a whole other spiel that I got for that, so just bear with me another couple of minutes. But, you know, we all know that there's it's no secret, you know, the lack of what should I call it, a credible kind of consciousness and compassion when it comes to the LGBTQ plus community, and I felt the need to talk about and address that. So I just want to make that clear. I really felt the need to address that. The responses and reactions are often cruel, and from bullying to being brutal reactions that are insensitive and uncongenial and unloving and, as I said, non-compassionate and just extremely hurtful. And the result of that kind of treatment can create a myriad of feelings and difficult experiences. I mean, like fear and anxiety, the pain from it, the alienation. You talked about how you didn't have a friend for 2 years. I don't know what the reason was, but still, you know, that's a type of alienation. Loneliness, depression, to name a few of those things. And sometimes the reactions from others leads to contemplation of suicide, and even worse, committing suicide. Now, ask me how I know. Well, my daughter Nikki passed away a few years ago from breast cancer. She was gay. But I want to save some of the short but shocking stories that go along with that until a little bit later in our conversation. But here's where I'm going right now with all of this. How can people be made more mindful of the devastation and destruction to the human spirit brought on by this kind of bullying and shaming and lack of acceptance toward other people? And here's what some people may be saying, that you just don't understand. You don't understand the feelings of the LGBTQ plus community. Well, here, yes, you do. And I'm going to tell you how you know. Have you ever been made to feel ashamed of yourself by a parent or a teacher, God, tears are coming to my eyes, or a coach, or anybody else that may have been important to you that you really needed their love and acceptance? You remember how that felt? Have you ever had a door shut in your face for reasons you didn't understand? Do you remember how that felt? Have you ever been abandoned or rejected by a person or a cause, you know, when you know you meant well? How did that feel? I'm sure you remember, because those kind of feelings stay with us. Have you ever felt unappreciated or treated badly or been abused in a relationship? Remember how hard that is and how horrible it feels or felt? I hope you're following me. Ever had the experience of being overlooked or ignored when you know you deserved whatever it was? How did that feel? Anybody ever shame you to your face or behind your back because of your hair and your clothes or where you live or what you do or stuff about your life? How did that feel when you found out about it? Have you ever been hurt so deeply or badly by someone that meant a lot to you? Remember how devastating those feelings were. Now, I could go on and on, but I know I don't have to because I know you get the point. Yes, you do know how they feel. If you felt any of those experiences, and I know that there are very few people who are exempt from the things that I just said. Anytime, I mean, who deserves to be made intentionally and treated with disdain? Who deserves that? Nobody does. And I think especially we as black people, I mean, we've been fighting the good fight for a very long time. If we don't understand discrimination and lack of equality and the pain of all of that, we ought to know that most minorities more than anybody else. We know that we deserve fairness and dignity and respect because we just do, because we're human. And that's what I mean by that. Rejection is tough. But we don't have to reject someone's humanity or disrespect someone's humanity or disregard someone's humanity because you disapprove or you disagree with them. Breaking someone's heart and spirit can be avoided, because when we do that, you know what I think? I think it says more about us than the person that's being targeted. It's just not right. It just ain't right, no matter how you cut it. What do you have to say, God? What do you have to say about that, Jamala?
Yeah, that was very well said, and thank you for putting that out there. I was thinking about this the other day.
I had to.
Yeah, it's important because it's also part of your story.
Yeah,
and I think when we tell our stories, people get free. When we tell our stories authentically. I was thinking about the whole humanity part of that. Sorry, what did you want to say?
Well, I said I had a couple of short and shocking little stories that I'll share, and then I'd like for you to talk about yours, your experiences.
Yeah.
But I remember, Nikki, my daughter Nikki, it's been a lot of years ago when she wrote me a letter telling me that she was gay. It's been a long time ago, probably a couple decades ago. And there's a lot that goes along with that. I don't need to tell all the intricate and intimate details of all the things that she went through, but it was extremely difficult emotionally, mentally. Her life was changed in the moment forever. And a lot of it just didn't go the way she had anticipated. And one of the hardest things for me, but I just thank God, I did not know until after the fact that one time when on just a whim, I decided to go to town, go to Milwaukee from Texas. This was after I had moved away, that I had actually come in at a time where I intervened on her contemplating and planning a suicide. When I learned afterward that that was what was happening. But thank God I got in position enough to prevent that. She had taken everything from work that belonged to her and, was prepping for this suicide event. And she would have been gone a lot sooner than just these last years when breast cancer took her life. That was hard. There were other pieces to her, dealing with the reactions and repercussions of coming out. But a lot of it was just, mindlessness and cruel responses from people. And I recall I have a very good friend who was a first lady at a large church in Houston. She and I was talking over things with her, and she and I were very good friends, like sisters. She said to me, she said, "You are the only person." Now, keep in mind, this is somebody over a major church in Houston. She said, "You're the only person I know that did not turn their back on their gay child." She said, "You're the only person I know." And I thought, man, in that big congregation and all the people you know, how sad a story is that to know. I would have given up every relationship I had if it meant that, if it meant turning my back on my daughter. That was never going to happen, not ever. If it was just me and her standing, that was never going to happen. That was a heartbreaking thought to me, that is the reaction of a parent who maybe in the Christian community who does not know how to deal with it, worried about what other people are going to think and, all of that kind of stuff. Not that I can't understand, but I can understand, but I can't understand at the same time. That's the child you birthed out of your body, They need you, particularly in their rough spots in life. Another thing that happened, I had some beautiful sister friends in Houston, but this story too is heartbreaking. I am just fighting back my emotions and tears because this particular woman was really a sister to me. We were, most of the close girlfriends I had, we were like sisters. This was a woman I truly admired, loved as a sister. We hung out, we worshiped together, we went to the same church. I still admire her. Let me just say that. Still admire her, still respect or would never say anything horrible. I'm just telling a true thing right now that happened. She and I went out one night to a dinner and a movie, and I told her about Nikki being diagnosed with breast cancer. And the first thing that came out of her mouth was, what did she expect living that life? Well, it was very hard for me to go through the rest of the evening because I was so stunned that this person that is so close to me could even say something like that to me, to my face, across the dinner table. It was just beyond trying to comprehend. And later, after Nikki passed away, she did reach out to me because I didn't want to have any more up close and personal contact with that, because that spoke too many versions of wrong to me. She said, I didn't know your daughter was that sick. I'm thinking, well, cancer spells sick, and usually very sick or very something or another. Now, let me say again, I have no disrespect. This woman is a phenomenal woman, very accomplished person. But sometimes you have to make a decision. Forgiveness is not a problem in this situation, but there are sometimes you can't look a person in the face any longer who would even have a thought process like that going across their mind to a mother who is trying to find every bit of strength to deal with her child's illness and at the same time other issues surrounding being gay. That was really, really a challenge. And then there was a time where in Nikki's journey, she wanted to have some spiritual counseling, and so she reached out to a local pastor in Milwaukee that I didn't know, but some members of my family knew. I didn't know him personally, but I knew of him. And this threw her into such a spiritual setback because he actually took the moment to express his desire to participate in a threesome when Nikki reached out to him for spiritual help. Now, if you tell me that kind of world isn't crazy, and why, that's what when I said lack of mindfulness, how are you, a pastor? And I took it upon myself to reach out to him. I said, you know what I'd really like to do is go right in front of your congregation and tell them what you just did. How could you? How could you? He said to me, I thought that's where she was going with it. I really thought she was just, kind of playing. Oh, okay, right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not something. What happened to your spiritual ear? My daughter didn't even have the kind of a personality. If that's what she meant, she would have said it. She reached out to him for some spiritual guidance. And that's just a few of the things. One other last thing, Nikki and I were both on Oprah as guests. Nikki had been invited to be a guest on Oprah. Again, this is a couple of decades ago. Oprah did a show on married people who came out of their marriages because they were gay. And the night before the show, Nikki asked me if I wanted to come along with her. Well, my spiritual antenna were all over the place. I knew. I'm like, yeah, I'm going, because I didn't say this to her, but I'm thinking, you're going to need me there with you. This is not, national television, you're going to need some mommy strength for sure. It's nothing. I'm sitting in the audience and just, supporting you and praying. Well, they actually had me sit on the front with all of the other guests, right next to my daughter. And it had its bittersweet type of moments. Oprah Winfrey is so extraordinary at her approach to people. And she talked to a couple of the others before she got to talk to me and Nikki. And, you know, ask Nikki a few questions, which she was responded to. And I'm looking at Nikki and not trying to do that, you know, that real, oh, my baby kind of look. I'm, you know, trying to keep my composure. But I knew that even though she had the confidence to come and do the show, I know my child's heart. My children are very tender-hearted women. And so as she answered some of those questions, I knew it was delicate for her. Her point was not just to, you know, be bold and brash about coming out. She just wanted to explain, to the best of her ability, how decisions like this were made and how she came to that decision. And then Oprah, what I really loved and admire, I'll never forget as long as I live, I could see her looking at Nikki and understanding that this wasn't somebody that you just go all in and try to pick them apart and break them down. You know, she's good at that, but she does it in such a professional way. You don't even know that that's what happened. Oprah is. But she didn't do that with Nikki. I saw the most sensitive expression, you know, come over her face. She looked at me and she said, "Mom, did you know Nikki was gay?" I said, "I really didn't." I said, "Because all Nikki's life, she grew up thinking she was going to marry Malcolm Jamal Warner." And, of course, that got a big laugh. And Oprah said to her, "What happened, Nikki?" And Nikki said, "It just didn't work out for us." So, you know, it was really a kind of cool thing. But here's what's interesting. When we went to break, I put my arms around my daughter and pulled her to my chest and on my shoulder because I knew that this was hard for her, even though she was trying to do it out of the strength that she knew she had. But, you know, I think that it's a challenge when, you know, you if all of us have this need for love and acceptance, and when it doesn't come correct, it's a hard thing. Now, I just know it just took most of the show, but we still got a lot of time left for you to talk to Mom.
No, it's totally fine.
So you can tell your stories. You can tell your story. I'm sorry?
You said everything that needed to be said about just the overarching human respect, because I was thinking about that yesterday. One of the things that made me so upset when I sort of like was liberated from where I was that I wasn't given the basic human respect because of the atmosphere that was acceptable in the church. So I was outed at a conference in front of a lot of people. And it was done in such a way where the person, this prophetess Vanessa Witherspoon, and I wrote everyone that ever had any homophobic thing to say to me in public, I wrote them all a letter. And I confronted my pastors about the, you know, the rhetoric that they were preaching, because I needed them to know what it was doing. If no one else said anything, I needed to say something. Because I was suicidal, and I actually believed so strongly what they were teaching me, but also had enough common sense to know that this was not something that could change. It's not something that can change. Like people, that's the one thing people probably should know. This is not something that you can go to an ex-gay therapy, and they shut ex-gay therapy down because it doesn't work. And it's illegal in most states. You cannot change yourself. I knew I couldn't do that. And, you know, these women were starting to come up and like, "God told me that you're supposed to be my husband." And I was like, I will not live that life. So I thought either mutilation, so that I would have an excuse to not have to have sex with anybody or get married, or suicide. Like, that was it. And thankfully, I did not do either, because our bishop, who was Carlton Pearson, who you may have heard of, started to preach inclusion, and that changed my life. Like, that, I'd never heard of a message where God loved gay people. Never. And that completely, within moments, changed my whole outlook. And it caused me to do my own research and my own studying and, like, even going inside and learning more about who I really am, and that I'm not this wretched, perverse, abominable creature. That's what was been, that That's what has been preached to me. And also, not to brag, but I was anointed, like really anointed. And I always say, like, the scripture can salt water and fresh water live in the same vessel. But it's sort of like you can't be filled with some demonic perverse entity and the Spirit of God. Like, I know I'm divine, and I know there's divinity in all people. If we're really honest, the majority of the people that are ushering people in congregations to the presence of God are same gender loving, whether we say it out loud or not. The
they are
psalmist,
what?
They're same gender loving or queer, gay. I use the term same gender loving. But the choir directors, the organists, the psalmist, like most of those people that whose job it is to usher us into the Spirit are gay people.
Well, let me say something in regard to that. I don't know, you know, when we say most, I don't know, you know, we're talking about a lot of churches and places of worship, but I can say with the same understanding and familiarity that you're speaking to, I've known that in churches that I've been in to be true. That I can absolutely say. Some mm-hmm. of my favorite people, mm-hmm. all those musicians who were, I mean, just could play like you just could not believe. And it's still the case. I can only recall maybe one or two churches I was ever at where there were not gay leaders in the church. And because of the pastoral leadership, it never even crossed my mind about being discriminant against anybody who was gay, because these were high-level pastors and preachers who knew how to make a decision about who they wanted or not, and apparently they knew who they wanted regardless of them being gay. It just I just didn't grow into my salvation with the understanding that you don't include everybody. That just never was the way I understood it. It wasn't something somebody said. It was just what I saw and experienced. It was just that way. And so I understand what you're saying, but I think that we got to be careful, because I know we'll hear somebody saying now, "Well, we're not gay, you know, our church isn't." And so let's be careful. I always want to do that rather than blanket a situation, because it does not necessarily mean, it means with our understanding and familiarity, and I'm talking about me and you, we know that that's the case in a lot of the churches where we have worshipped and where we know people. I can say this, though, that there are a tremendous amount of folks in all arenas who are gay, and it doesn't impact the relevance, the efficacy, the way things work, and in many cases it's a really effective situation, you know, depending on who they are and what they do. So that's the way I would maybe look at that, as far as the people that, you know, we are familiar with. And I know yours is much broader than mine, so I'm not discounting that. Yeah, I'm not. You've been in so many churches, but there are certainly some who don't categorically fit that.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't say all. I wouldn't say all, but a lot. I love what Bishop Flender says, which is a little extreme. It's a joke, but she said, if there were no same gender loving gospel artists, there would be two songs, and they wouldn't be good songs.
Because
she's out lesbian. She you know, thank you, you know, the song "Thank You Lord for All You've Done." That's her singing with Walter Hawkins. So she's been in gospel for like decades, and she said there's tons of people that are well known that have churches that are major gospel artists that will never come out because they'll lose their following. But they, you know, they'll talk to her about what they're dealing with. Yeah, but those same ministers or singers are a lot of, many of them have to sit in churches hearing how they're an abomination and then get up and minister. And that was my conflict because the only time I really felt free was when I was in worship. And I don't feel like I've led worship. I feel like I was worshiping and then invited people to join me. But then I would have to hear sermons about, you know, how I'm an abomination and all this stuff. And it didn't line up with what I had just experienced when I'm leading worship. And it just caused devastation. And I feel like if the Spirit gives life, then what are you giving that is causing so much death? There's tons of gay, queer, transgender loving folks that have tried to commit suicide because of the rhetoric coming out of the church, the abomination narrative. And it also,
that's a lot of what I was explaining.
Yeah, it also bleeds over into how you think of yourself, like the HIV rates in the Black queer community are higher, and I have talked to some people who have studied this that say they believe it is because if you already believe you're an abomination, why would you protect yourself? You know, if you feel you're worth a healthy life. You know, it affects your self-esteem. It affects how you view yourself. And it's not, you know, the results are not of God. If it's causing people to become depressed and want to end their life, why do we keep preaching it?
Well, a lot of it is, I believe, because that's some things from the Bible are very easy to repeat and hold on to if you want to kind of glance over society. That's one of them. So I guess, you know, one of the purposes and points that I wanted to bring out is something I know that in the Bible, Jesus is quoted as specifically saying, and that is treat people the way you want to be treated. That's clear and plain too. So where do you find the validity in, you know, unless you know someone who is, and I'm not talking about gay community, I'm talking about in general, people who, I mean, some people we can't treat with a high regard, respect, and kindness because we know they're doing some horrible, horrible things, maybe to children or, you know, just horrific things. And it's hard to do that. But when we're talking about people that are just going out about living their life, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated. There are so many people that everybody's different than us. Every person you look at is different than you for some reason or another. But why grab hold of that? I was asked about this a couple of years ago at a conference where I was speaking at a women's conference, a church in Chicago. And I said, you know, are there not enough issues that a Christian can look at that they can become a part of and do something about to really impact society? Is this what you really want to choose? You want to point out who's gay? You want to point out, you know, what you think about that? Is that really it? What about all the people just even before the pandemic that needed food and housing and help, money, you? Come on now. Come on.
But
what did
but
you
know
do?
A lot
what
of,
did you do about any of that? So I think, you know, I think that we really should look at if some of the decisions you're feeling you're making about a person being gay, if that's the reason, look at some of the things that Jesus has compelled you to do. And I don't know that it is. It may be certain people's calling to try to tackle that issue. Maybe. But for the rest of us, if each one of us did something for somebody that really was meaningful and helpful, the world would change overnight. So, yeah. You know, I just think that there is a positioning. Just be careful about the observation or the conclusion or the judgment that you make. All of us are just out here trying to live our life as best as we can. That's all of us. Look at some of the commonalities in that, not what you think are so very odd or different. Everybody's different. A lot of them are odd, but that's okay. That's, you know, if their odd isn't hurting anybody, let people alone. Yeah. And let people work out their own situation like you just talked about with God. Let people do that because the word clearly says that too. Work out your own salvation, you know.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something, that's a lot of work in itself.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's just, go on.
No, I did want to say that you mentioned why certain preachers will zero in on this. And unfortunately, and I've seen this in a lot of churches too, a lot of preachers that are concentrated on one area have problems in that area.
Mm-hmm.
If they're always talking about women and what they should wear and what they shouldn't wear and this dress is too tight, they sometimes, I won't say all, they have problems with, like, women and lust and whatever, or they're always talking about money. Or but it's like if a preacher is always talking about gay people and condemning gay people. This happened in New York, in Harlem. There's a pastor, he's famous for the things that he said about gay people. And of course it came out that he was gay. Of course. Because why would you focus on it if it's not an issue for you?
I remember that. I don't remember who it was, but I remember the story.
Yeah, but there's so many stories like that. And it's like, you're not fooling me, definitely. Because, like, there's really no need to focus on it if you're not trying to kill something within yourself that you don't like. And there's a story, I won't mention the names because I don't want to be all gossipy. There's a well-known gospel artist that is very anti-gay, and our bishop said that he was trying to get at one of the members. And I knew a friend of mine that passed away 2 years ago that he was, like, texting back and forth with. And it's like that hypocrisy. I think we have to start analyzing and accepting our humanness. Like, it doesn't, I don't even know how to say this. Like, the part of you that desires that is not demonic. It is a human thing. But because you have disdain for it, because of what you've been taught, you now preach against it, and you're causing turmoil and depression for other people. It's a horrible cycle.
Yeah. You know, when I analyze, and I guess that's the best word that I can use, spiritually, I know and understand that this flesh that we live in is capable of all sorts of stuff. But I also know this, it's not going with us when we leave here. So whatever it's doing, does want to do, it's just going to be as dead can be. Every desire, lust, want, everything is just going to die. And so, again, I just want to speak to the fact that while we are all here trying to live as human beings together, there's so many ways we can do better. And it just, you know, when I realized I was going to be talking to you, I said, this is a really good opportunity for me to express the things I said earlier about how devastating it is to be treated so insensitively. How I imagine that people that say or do things just really don't have an idea, or maybe some of them do, the impact they're having on a soul when they're hurting you with their words or treatment. That, mm-hmm. as I say it, that's just not right. It's just not right. And so I really, you know, all the things that you've said have helped expand it. I know the understanding of views from that standpoint, and I've tried to share what I know and understand from having a gay daughter. It still just boils down to you still just need to treat people a certain way, and if it's in your ability. Will this show change any of that? I can guarantee you it's going to change some parts in mine. That I know. Mm-hmm. That I know. Mm-hmm. But, and it may be just the people who you may have hurt or insulted so badly, they may be contemplating suicide. But I really feel that there is that's why I called it the cruel truth, because that to me is the cruel truth of what the impact does to an individual's heart and soul and mind to face such rejection and feelings of, you know, not being accepted and not being loved just for being the person that they are. So that was my point of intention, and it's not, whatever people's opinions may be of the show altogether, they'll have to, you know, deal with that. I'm not going to answer any questions or present any arguments or defenses or any. I've said what I had to say today. So unless I'm asked on a higher platform, this is just not up for general discussion. Germana, you would not believe the amount of time, contemplation, and meditation I had to spend before talking to you to make sure that what I was putting out there was an accurate way of how I felt, an accurate way of what I felt individuals can do to change their hearts about how they treat people. I had to really spend a lot of time with that. I really did. A lot. And I don't take any of these shows for granted. I usually think through most of them, but this one, it took more contemplation, because I really do care about people. I always have been that person. I care about people, and it maybe has a lot to do with as a child, I had some hurts and bullying and things like that. I saw that happen to other people as well, and so I kind of grew up with this thing of just, I guess, a desire to bring forth things that empower, that help, that heal. That's the very nature, you know, of where I'm coming from and most of the time in my work. So I believe we accomplished a lot today, and I want to thank you for being so transparent and allowing me to share the things that you have talked about today. I appreciate you so much for that. And I guess as we reach the point where we're going to wrap, I wanted to ask you if there's anything else that you'd like to add. And if not, just let's remind people about things that are coming up and where to go on your website to look for you.
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for telling your story and being transparent and open and honest, because there may be a young person that is listening to you or listening to us and feels validated, or this may save someone's life. You never know.
True.
So as a young person, hearing adults accept me was life-changing and life-saving because their opinion mattered. So thank you for that and for the platform. And there is a movement of more inclusive churches, more inclusive ministries that will accept everyone. And I encourage people to be more vocal about their embrace of all people. I think people sometimes need to know that they're okay with you, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just put it plainly. Like, there's no, I don't find, like, openly embrace people. Let them know that they're loved and that there's nothing for them to be ashamed about. Or I think that is, you know, like the songs that what the world needs now is love. Love, sweet love, you know. So
absolutely.
Let it flow. But so the album is out on, it's called Brown Liquor and Blessed Oil. You can find more about it on my website, which is germanotoussaint.com. You can look up my name on Apple, Tidal, Spotify, and all the info will be there. All my songs will be there. It's my first album. So if you love it, share it with people that you think would be moved by it. So hopefully it gets a good response.
What are your social media sites?
Yeah, my Instagram is Toussaint for you. That's TOUSSAINT, the number 4 and the letter U. My website again is Germano Toussaint, 2 O's, GERMONOTOUSSAINT. .com. My Twitter is GermanoTV.
All right. Well, we got it out there. And again, I want to thank you. It was awesome conversation with you today. I sure appreciate you. Let me know if your Pastor Bo was listening. He sometimes reaches out to me on Facebook with some silly questions. He is so funny.
That's
just hilarious. But I think one of the last things he shared with me was when his wife was speaking at some event, he was so proud. that was only a few weeks ago, I believe. So, anyway, again, yes, she is. Thank you so much, Germano. And, we're going to stay in touch. I don't have to do all the, woo-woo stuff with you. We're going to stay in touch. So I'll be looking forward to that.
So.
Yeah, I told you already.
I feel like you want me to cast you.
Yeah, well, you know, did I say that? Uh-huh, yeah, okay.
you sort of put it out there, so I'll have that in mind.
All right, that sounds good. All right, well, listen, I can't say thank you enough. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You enjoy the rest of your day, and you keep that creativity going, and I'm sure you're going to shoot something out about the date again for the album that's coming out on July what? 4th?
July 4th.
Okay.
Independence
great,
Day.
Great, great,
appropriately.
Great. Yeah, for sure. All right, sir. You take good care of yourself, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thank you so much. You have a great day, too. All right.
Thank you. And all of you who are listening today or whenever you decide you are going to put your ear to hear what's going on Foxology, I thank you as well. I try to have some really good, really, really good, insightful conversations here, and this certainly proved to be one as well. I hope that if nothing else, that your paradigm may have shaped a little bit differently about some things, about what we were talking about, or maybe even touched your heart, changed your heart somewhat in some regard. But if neither of those things, thank you for listening anyway. I'm going to look forward to talking to you again real soon. I try to do this on Mondays, but any day works for me. That works for the guests I ask, so it could be any day of the week. But you keep your eyes peeled to my social media, because I always announce it, and you'll be able to see what's going on at that time. So I'm going to look forward to talking to you again soon. In the meantime, be good, be blessed, and be awesome.
Thank you.